at the Rita on the UW Parkside campus, featuring over 80 local students and guest artists from the Joffe Ballet. Tickets and information at classicaldancearts.com. Support for WGTD's morning show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenosians who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional morning show co-host. I probably don't have to identify that music to you. I'm sure just about all of you listening know that that is the overture to one of the most beautiful and beloved of all ballets, The Nutcracker, by Russian composer Peter Tchaikovsky. You have the opportunity this coming weekend to experience The Nutcracker in all of its splendor and beauty and charm, and you don't have to travel to Chicago or Milwaukee to do so. You can travel to the University of Wisconsin Parkside, right up the road from our WGTD studios, and experience the beautiful production of Racine's Studio of Classical Dance Arts. I saw their Nutcracker last year and was so glad that I came. I enjoyed every moment of it. I was impressed on all kinds of different levels. And this happens to be the 10th production of Nutcracker, which the Studio of Classical Dance Arts has presented to the community. So it's an auspicious occasion indeed, in which for us to welcome into our studios Linda Bennett and Mark Darling, husband and wife, and co-directors of the Studio of Classical Dance Arts, here to talk about their love of dance and about this particular company, the young dancers with whom they work, and of course specifically about this masterpiece, Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker, and the joys and delights and frustrations and headaches and tensions that are part of mounting something as ambitious as this. So Linda Bennett, Mark Darling, we welcome both of you to the morning show.
Good morning, Greg.
Good
it's
morning.
A pleasure to be here.
Good to have you here. Good to have you here. We do want to say specifically that the performances of Nutcracker are coming up this weekend. Two performances on Saturday, one at 1:30, the other at 6, and then Sunday afternoon at 1:30, and that will be at the ComArts Theater in the beautiful Rita Talent Pickin' Center for Arts and Humanities on the campus of the University of Wisconsin Parkside. Before we start talking very specifically about Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker and playing a few excerpts from the score and talking about specifics of the production, I think it would be interesting for us to get to know each of you, find out a little bit about where you're from originally, and certainly a little bit about your own trajectory as dancers, now directors of ballet, how all of this began. And I don't know, ladies first, Linda Bennett, where are you from originally? And at what point in your life did ballet become a really important thing?
Sure. I'm originally from Southern California near San Diego. And I think ballet has almost always been a part of my life to some degree or another. I grew up in a very musical and arts-oriented family. We always had the, you know, music on the radio, and my parents definitely wanted to expose us to the arts and took us to performances and things like that. My first recollection, or at least this is the way my parents tell it, is they took me to see the ballet Swan Lake when I was about 4.5 years old, and I remember sitting very close to the stage and just being enthralled by all of the white tutus and tulle and spinning dancers. And apparently, again, according to my parents, I said, this is what I want to do when I grow up, and that hasn't changed.
So at what point did you begin engaging in it yourself? I mean, what did you almost immediately at the age of 4 or 5 start going to dance class and so on?
I did. I started lessons when I was 5. It was a gift from my grandparents, and my grandmother actually made me my first tutu and started studying more seriously when I got to be about 10 and 11 and really decided it was something that I wanted to pursue as a career probably by the time I was about 13 or 14.
Was there anybody else in your family engaged in that specifically, or are you the one and only ballet dancer?
Nobody at all. I was kind of the black sheep of the family in terms of doing that. But I had such support from my family right from the beginning, and it's just been wonderful. And they've learned through the years about it just as much as I have. Mm.
So when you started to get to, for instance, high school and thinking about college or conservatory or whatever, this is obviously foremost in your mind. Where did you end up pursuing sort of the next level of study?
Sure. Once I graduated from high school, I really wanted to train a little bit more. The studio I trained at in Southern California was fantastic, but there weren't quite as many opportunities right in that area. So I moved to New York, and I trained at the Joffrey Ballet School in New York for 2 years. And it's kind of a finishing school for dancers in a lot of ways. And I looked at it as kind of my college before I decided to actually go to college after my career.
Oh, okay. So tell us a little more about what that training was like at the Joffrey School. I mean, were you taking actually coursework, or was it more just the rigors of ballet practice morning, noon, and night? I mean, what was that gauntlet like?
Well, it was definitely ballet training. We usually took 3 or 4 classes a day, and our schedule started at about 9:30 in the morning, and we usually went until about 4:30 in the afternoon. And within that time, we had different styles of classes. We would have our traditional ballet class for between 1.5 and 2 hours. We'd also have pas de deux class, which is a partnering class, separate class for point work. Sometimes we'd have more of a modern class as well.
Once you were done with that, then what happened?
Well, as a dancer, what happens is you audition for companies, and you audition and audition and audition, just like any actor or performer, and you hope that you get hired by somebody. And I was fortunate enough to be hired by the Milwaukee Ballet Company. And so I moved to Milwaukee and had my career there.
Terrific. When was that you came to Milwaukee?
Came to Milwaukee in 1989.
Well, we are glad to have you in the area for more reasons than one.
Thank you.
How about you, Mark Darling? Tell us about where you're from. Are you from someplace as exotic and warm as San Diego, California?
Not quite. I'm a Midwestern boy. Born in Delaware originally, but moved to Elgin, Illinois in 1973, way back then. My life in ballet was an unconventional one initially. My mom was a tap teacher, and I was a normal high school guy. I played sports, wrestling, and football, and all of those things. And I would help out backstage. And one year, there was a young lady that was teaching ballet at the studio where my mom taught tap. Now, I was a senior in high school, and she was 2 years out of high school. So you can imagine that dynamic, and I really wanted to meet her. And I thought, what better way than to go take class from her? And so I went and took class from her and ended up meeting her, and she was very nice and everything, but it was ballet that I fell in love with, and it's been a part of my life ever since.
Wow. So at what point in your high school career did that happen?
That was my senior year in high school.
Oh, okay. All right. Yep. So I was trying to picture you as a sophomore or a junior playing football in the fall and doing ballet in the winter and just trying to figure out what your friends would have made of that.
Sure, sure. Well, there's no doubt I got teased a little bit, but most people were in my circle were very accepting and thought it was wonderful. In this day and age, it's not uncommon for football players, even professional players, to take ballet. One of the most famous ones was a Chicago Bear wide receiver, Willie Gault, who actually took ballet on a regular basis and performed with Chicago Ballet.
Really?
Yes, they did.
And are you saying that was done to enhance his abilities as a football player?
Absolutely was. It in order to help his flexibility and his balance and his ability to move quickly.
Huh. What position did you play in football?
I played linebacker.
Really?
Linebacker, yeah.
I was going to say, well, maybe wide receiver or something. I could see the crossover. But I guess linebackers have to be nimble in their own way
exactly.
as well.
Exactly. Huh.
So you obviously fell in love with this pretty quickly.
I did.
So what did you do beyond this first step in acting
on
it?
Sure, sure. Well, as soon as I fell in love with ballet, I started taking class as much as I could. Class is something we do. We go into the studio, and we're there for an hour, hour and a half, and we practice all the different steps. So I started doing that almost on a daily basis right away. I arranged my high school schedule so I could graduate early, and I started studying in Chicago, which was an hour and 15 train ride each way. So I had 2 hours and a half on the train to go into Chicago and study.
Wow.
And I did that for 2 years after high school, very much as Linda did. And I was there all day, and I'd come home at night and sleep and eat breakfast in the morning and then go back to Chicago. Hmm. After my time there, I progressed enough that I went to Philadelphia and studied with the Pennsylvania Ballet and did that for 2 years. And once I completed that training, I was able to get employment. My first job was at Ballet Austin in Austin, Texas.
Ah, okay. And eventually, did you end up in Milwaukee? Is that where you...
I did. I did. I joined Milwaukee Ballet the same year that Linda did in 1989.
Very good. I'm just curious, as someone who was a high school athlete in both, you said, football and wrestling, what did the physical rigors of ballet feel like compared to the rigors of more sort of conventional athletic endeavor?
Sure, sure. Surprisingly, it's much more difficult. With football, you can just completely expend your energy in one direction and just not worry too much about the technique of it, and certainly not worry about how you look. But with a ballet dancer, we have to work every bit as hard as a football player or a wrestler or what have you, and look relaxed and calm while we do it.
Ah, right. Because appearance is a huge part of what you are doing.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. It is a visual art form.
Hmm. Yes, and you don't want to see when the guy is lifting the girl, you certainly don't want to see him grunting or groaning.
Or hearing him grimace. And yes,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Can I ask a little bit about the two of you meeting at Milwaukee Ballet? Was it one of these love at first sight things with violins in the background? Or
not quite. I'd love to say that, yes. it very much evolved, and it actually evolved right around the Nutcracker, which is a lovely thing. The Nutcracker has a really special place in both of our hearts, both separately but also as a couple. We met at the company in Milwaukee Ballet, but we really got to be very good friends when we started guest performing up in Green Bay. There's a small company up in Green Bay, and they were looking for guest performers 1 year, and we both thought that that would be really interesting to do. So we talked to each other and said, sure. And so we ended up going back and forth to Green Bay every year for about 4 or 5 years, I think, guest dancing up there. And because we were both going to the same place, we'd ride together in the car and have dinner afterwards and breakfast in the morning. And
there you go.
Spent a lot of time talking and just getting to be really good
really
friends.
Really good friends. Yeah.
And from there, it just evolved.
Very good. Yeah. Well, we're all glad it did. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today on The Morning Show with Linda Bennett and Mark Darling, who are the co-directors of the Studio of Classical Dance Arts in Racine. And this coming weekend, for the 10th time, they are mounting Peter Tchaikovsky's beloved ballet, The Nutcracker, in performances Saturday and Sunday in the ComArts Theater at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. I'm curious to just know a little bit about the life of professional dancers. First of all, what is that arc typically like? Does one begin in a sense sort of small supporting roles and kind of work your way up into things that are more prominent? Do you end up dancing the same ballets over and over again, but with the choreography changing? I mean, typically just map out for us what this experience is like.
Sure. Well, that's kind of a yes to everything.
Yeah. And exactly.
And a lot more. Hmm. It really, every dancer's career is a little bit different. But traditionally, it starts very much the way you said, where you do the supporting roles. As a female dancer, we do a lot of what's called the corps de ballet work, which is the work with the multiple girls, the 16 swans or the you know, 8 waltz of the flowers.
Pirouetting in perfect right. unison.
Exactly. And then from there, you do work your way up within the company if you're strong enough and capable enough, and to the supporting roles, which are called the soloist or demi-soloist roles, where they're more featured roles but not yet quite the lead ballerina yet. Mm-hmm. And then if you're lucky enough and strong enough and have all the stars align, then you get some of the leading roles as well.
Yeah. What is typically the balance in a company, for instance, like the Milwaukee Ballet, between men and women?
Men and women. It's usually about a third men to two-thirds women. Most of the big traditional ballets are rather heavy on the woman side.
It seems like yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know Swan Lake has how many, sweetie? About 24 girls in it.
Yes.
And usually about 10 to 11 guys. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty typical ratio.
Right. How much is the reality of injury a part of the life of the typical professional ballet dancer? And what are, for instance, the experiences of the two of you have
had? Personal experiences,
yeah.
Sure. Well, an injury is always something that is a possibility. Just like anybody else, you can walk out of your house in the morning and twist your ankle on the curb. The difference is, for us, if we do that, we can't do our job. So we're very careful. We don't, most of us engage in risky sports and that sort of thing. Like, I always wanted to take up skiing when I was younger. I never did because of the risk of injury for ballet. My personal experience with an injury is kind of an interesting one. I was performing in Nutcracker. I was doing the Russian solo, and I broke my foot on stage. And
wow. Oh my gosh.
It's one of those dramatic, you know, sort of storybook stories. And I kept dancing and finished the performance. I didn't know my foot was broken. I heard something that sounded vaguely like a pencil snapping, but with the music and the audience and all of that, I just was enjoying the performance. And the next day I went and they took an X-ray and they said, guess what? Your foot's broken.
Wow.
So.
Was it a matter of you, I mean, you maybe don't even know if you just landed at the wrong angle or something?
I did. I landed at the wrong angle. I landed slightly on the outside of my foot, and it was a little, one of the metal tarsals in my foot that decided it wasn't happy about that.
Wow. And so you're out of commission for how long when something like that
It
happens?
Took about 6 weeks.
Wow.
6 weeks before I could get back on stage. It took about 3 weeks of keeping the foot immobile, and then after that I was able to start back in class. And then about 6 weeks later, I was back on stage.
Wow. So the understudy goes on then, I suppose.
Exactly.
Huh? Wow. How about you, Linda? Have you had better luck when it comes to injuries in your own career?
I have. I've been fairly fortunate to have a fairly sturdy body and good genes. Thanks, Mom and Dad. And haven't had really too many injuries. But dancers are certainly careful with their bodies. And if you feel something starting to come on, a little ache, a little pain, you definitely take care of it early on and so it doesn't become worse. Hmm.
Typically, how long does the career of a professional dancer last? Because I suspect that it's not something one can do forever for probably a lot of different reasons.
A lot of different reasons go into that. Most dancers have a career that ranges up to about 10 years once they start professionally dancing. Some will go on for a long, long time. For Linda and I, it was a little bit different. I danced for about 10 years. I think you danced for 7?
Yeah. Professionally.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
So did you have a sort of a hunger all along to someday do what you're doing now? I mean, I think some people sort of fall into it as maybe a last resort, or, well, I can't do this anymore, so I'll do that instead. But, I mean, and then other people really feel a genuine calling to it. What would be your story?
Absolutely. I started at a studio in Chicago when I moved to take classes in Chicago called Stone Cameron. And they were two really old school gentlemen that had their own little school in downtown Chicago. And I fell in love with what they did. And very early on, I wanted to do that and pass along what I've learned to future generations.
How about you, Linda?
For me, I didn't really know that I had a passion for teaching until I started teaching. I knew that I would always have ballet in my life. I couldn't imagine anything without it. But once I got in the studio and really started teaching and working with the kids, it was amazing. And just the thrill of seeing the kids every day and seeing their development and how they grow and how much we can help pass on this beautiful art form to the next generation is really exciting and very fulfilling.
Sure. Tell us a little bit about the creation of your company. Again, it's the Studio of Classical Dance Arts, and this is the 10th year that you're doing Nutcracker. But
right.
were you around before you began doing Nutcracker?
This is our 10th year of Nutcracker and our 11th year as a studio. So we were fairly ambitious. We just started the Nutcracker the second year we were open.
Wow.
And probably would have done it the first if we had had more students and more time.
Yeah,
sure. So tell us what was involved in getting this off the ground. I suppose one of the first things you have to do is decide where you're going to do this.
Right.
Why did you choose Racine?
Well, we started teaching actually at a studio here locally.
Oh.
Once we retired from dancing, we knew we wanted to open our own studio. And we taught at a number of places, kind of just to get the experience and
to
understand the whole process of owning a studio. And once we were kind of ready to start opening a studio on our own, we ended up teaching for another local studio here and fell in love with the area and realized that there wasn't really anything like we had to offer between Milwaukee and
Chicago.
Northern Illinois. And thought this is something that we can really bring to the community.
Yeah. We fell in love with the people of Racine and southeastern Wisconsin, the Kenosha area as well. I'm not sure why, but the students here are just absolutely wonderful. And we just feel so lucky with our students and families. We have a lot of friends, as you might imagine, that have done the same in different areas.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk to them, we all share stories, as everybody does.
Sure.
And we're just so proud of our families and our students and how wonderfully talented and supportive they all are.
Mm-hmm.
And we've not seen that type of talent and support anywhere else. And it's really a unique thing that we have here, and we're really proud of everybody.
Terrific. Did it get off the ground as you envisioned and successfully from the start? Or
it did.
Yeah, it's been a really great process. It's kind of slow and steady. We're definitely the turtle, but it's grown in a way that we've really been able to manage it and to help it in the best way possible. Slow and steady, and with each year, the kids get better, the studio gets stronger, and I think it will continue.
So just give us a general sense, at least, of what it is that you offer. What kind of an array of classes? I mean, do you start with the little 3-year-olds?
We start with the little 4-year-olds. We offer what's called a creative movement class, which is it's a structured class, but it's got a lot more creativity for the young ones, a lot more interacting and using their imaginations and things like that. All the way up through the basic ballet class, starting about age 7, up through the most advanced levels and through adults as well.
And has very much changed about sort of what you're doing or how you're doing it over the course of this decade?
Well, certainly as a teacher, I know I've definitely grown and learned a lot just by teaching and being in the studio. And So I think that the studio has grown because we've grown as teachers and as people.
Do you each sort of take on different roles in this? I mean, do you feel like you each have sort of areas of special expertise or experience?
We do. I think we both have our strengths, and there are different things, which is great because I think both when they come together, it is able to create the whole. Like, certainly I leave a lot of the technical stuff to Mark. He deals with all of the musical stuff and the building of the sets and anything having to do with electronics, I leave that to him.
And Linda manages all of the costumes. She actually makes all of the costumes for our Nutcracker production, as well as our spring production. This year I think we have over 120 costumes, and they're all handmade and hand-fitted. Yeah,
and Mark builds all the sets. So anything you see on stage that's rolling around or a giant fireplace, we've got a big gingerbread house, and he's built all of that.
Well, my hat goes off to both of you because I saw the Nutcracker last year. It was a splendid-looking production, and I never would have guessed that two little people were responsible for creating all that. For those of you just joining us, I'm talking today with Linda Bennett and Mark Darling, who are co-directors of Racine's Studio of Classical Dance Arts, and their production of Nutcracker is coming up this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. We should talk about this ballet. I called it the most beloved ballet in the world in history, and I'm pretty sure I'm right about that. And, of course, it's central to the exploits of just about any professional ballet dance company. For people who are in the ballet, is it a ballet that you're sort of sick and tired of by now? I'm hoping not.
Well,
it might
certainly
depend on the dancer, but I think every dancer holds Nutcracker in a special place in their heart. It's something that, especially as a young girl, you see the Sugar Plum Fairy, and you just imagine one day, maybe, you'll get to be the Sugar Plum Fairy, and I don't think that ever really changes.
Right.
And for me, and I know a lot of other dancers, a lot of my friends, all I have to do is think of the young ones in the audience where this is their very first experience in ballet, and it's just such a magical thing, and I never get tired of that. Even now that we're behind the scenes, it's just a magical thing to walk out in the audience and see the little faces and the light in their eyes.
Terrific. For somebody who actually has only heard the name Nutcracker but has never experienced it in person, maybe one of you could kind of sketch what the basic story is, the plot of the Nutcracker, and also tell us where that story comes from.
I think I'll leave that to Linda.
Sure. Well, the story is based loosely on the E.T.A. Hoffman book, The Nutcracker and the Mouse King. The music was actually commissioned by a choreographer named Petipa in Russia, he commissioned Tchaikovsky to compose the music. And the story, depending on the version that you see, it's all very much the same. It starts off at a Christmas party in Clara's house, which is a young girl, and she has a brother named Fritz, and they have a wonderful Christmas party, and within this party, she's given a Nutcracker doll. And this doll, I think, has special magical powers. And after the party is done, everybody goes to bed, and Clara sneaks back out in the middle of the night to find her Nutcracker doll. And as the clock strikes midnight, very strange things start to happen in the living room. Giant mice appear, things start moving, things start disappearing. And as the mice start to encroach on Clara, her Nutcracker doll appears, but it appears as not a small doll, but as a full-sized human being. And the Nutcracker brings his toy soldiers out to fight the mice to protect Clara. About halfway through the battle, usually, the Mouse King or Queen appears to really make sure that the battle gets won. And there's a big fight between the Nutcracker Prince and the Mouse King or Queen. And in the end, of course, the Nutcracker wins. And he sweeps Clara off to the land of the snow, where they meet the dancing snowflakes. And from there, they go off to the land of the sweets, where they meet the Sugar Plum Fairy and all of the different characters that live within the land of the sweets. There's the Spanish chocolate. There's the Chinese tea, Arabian coffee. There's the marzipan shepherdesses, the gingerbread kids, the Russian candy canes, and the sugared flowers.
Sounds delicious, doesn't it? And wonderful. I'm just curious, if we grabbed an opera score off the shelf, Verdi's Otello, for instance, right in the score, not only are the words that are being sung, which convey the story, but then all kinds of stage directions about Otello enters with the knife and so on.
Sure.
Where are those kind of instructions, for instance, in something like the Nutcracker? If you get a full score, does it tell you all the things that are supposed to be happening, or are many of the specifics left up to the imagination of a given choreographer?
That's a great question. There is nothing in writing about stage direction or choreography or anything, and it is very much up to the imagination of the individual director. The basic story, as Linda outlined, is pretty standard throughout the world. The different variations that happen are created by the directors and the choreographers.
There's certainly some standard things, like when the Spanish music plays, it's probably going to be Spanish dancers.
Right.
And there's a likelihood of a fan in that particular variation. Sugar Plum, the pas de deux and the variations, has some fairly standard choreography that goes all the way back to the petit pas version. But the rest of it is all individually created.
I think it would be interesting for us to listen to a couple of things that come from the score.
Sure.
And particularly if there are things in which there are really especially enchanting aspects of your production that you want to maybe talk about a little bit. And I know as we chatted before we started, one of the scenes that you are especially proud of involves the waltz of the
snowflakes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So why is this a big deal in your production?
Well, this is a big deal because just a few years ago, actually, when we moved our production here to Parkside, we added falling snow to our production. So not only do you get the dancing snowflakes, but you get the falling snow on stage as well. And it's just a beautiful scene.
And it's also a representation of the core work Linda was speaking of earlier, where all of the girls come out and dance together doing the same steps. And it is the most challenging and beautiful section of Nutcracker.
Right. So what's happening in the story when this occurs?
When this occurs, this is after the battle scene.
The Nutcracker, so all of that has already happened.
Right, right. The Nutcracker Prince has vanquished the Mouse Queen and is sweeping Clara off into the land of the snow, onto the land of the sweets.
Okay, so and a lot of other very familiar things then follow thereafter.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's listen to just a few minutes of this beautiful portion, which is Journey of the Snow and Waltz of the Snowflakes. Again, this is from Tchaikovsky's ballet Nutcracker. This is a very, very famous recording of this music by the Philadelphia Orchestra under Eugene Ormandy. So what we've been listening here to is, you're telling me, is the pas de deux?
The pas de deux. It's called the snow pas de deux. And it actually happens right after the battle scene. And it's where the Nutcracker Prince tells Clara that everything's okay.
Mm.
And that the mice are gone. And he's starting to show her around the land of the snow. And the music we've been hearing is where they're dancing together. And it's actually just before the snowflakes come on.
All right. And now we start to hear the sound of snowflakes in Tchaikovsky's music. Here we go. We're listening to music of Tchaikovsky from The Journey Through the Snow and The Waltz of the Snowflakes. I'm just curious, through the course of the 10 years you've been doing Nutcracker, has the basic choreography, for instance, for this scene, remained largely unchanged, or does that change over time, maybe with the dancers you have and so on?
Sure, sure. Well, every year we look at the dancers that we have, and we adjust the show and make changes and embellishments and enhancements based on the dancers. Snow, however, we just added 4 years ago, so it wasn't part of our original production because, truthfully, we didn't have the technical ability within our dancers to do snow.
You mean the actual falling?
Well, no, I actually mean the ability of the dancers to do the steps to do the performance.
So this portion of the ballet just wasn't part of our original performance,
and we added it 4 years ago because our kids have just grown that much.
Very good. Well, it's a moment from the ballet I remember very vividly from seeing it last year, for sure. Let's turn to another moment that is worth our talking about, and it might be the single most familiar moment to just about any man or woman on the street, and that would be the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy. And I know that you're especially excited to talk about this because of a guest you have as part of your
production.
Absolutely.
Right. Our guest performers this year are Jamelia Garcia and Mauro Villanova. And they both are former dancers with the Joffrey Ballet. Jamelia also is a former professional with the Milwaukee Ballet as well. She was a principal there. She actually joined the company the year after we retired. But we've gotten to know her, and we've become friends with her over the years. And we've wanted to, and asked her every year that we've asked guest performers to come. We've wanted her to come. But she's incredibly busy, and this year all the stars aligned and it worked out, and she was able to come and be our Sugar Plum Fairy this year, and we're extremely excited.
Cool. Yeah. So is that all she does? I mean, that's kind of funny to phrase it that way, but I mean, not that that isn't a big deal, but I mean,
sure.
That's all she will dance in the production?
Yes, she will dance. She and her partner will dance a little bit in the beginning of the second act, and then they'll dance the Sugar Plum Fairy, the pas de deux. They each have their own variation. As they finish that, there's what's called the coda, which is kind of the coming together of the two of them again. And then they'll dance in our finale as well.
Terrific. So it's probably kind of an interest. It's like being the place kicker on a football team.
Exactly.
You got to keep your foot limber for that moment when it's finally time to do your thing. At least in this, you know when you're doing it. You
right.
Know,
exactly. And what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, very good. Well, let's listen to this famous music, Variation 1 and Variation 2 in the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy. Again, this is from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker. So this is variation number one, and who dances this then?
This would be the Cavalier, the Sugar Plums Fairy's Cavalier.
Linda, you were just saying that this music brings back a lot of memories because you've danced this many, many times yourself.
I have, probably starting from about the age of 16. I've danced it almost every year.
Wow, wow. And when we get to the coda portion, then what happens? Is it the Sugar Plum Fairy and her cavalier?
Yes, they both come together on stage, and it's when they do the most exciting and probably the most difficult steps that they do within the choreography.
Very good. Wonderful music from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker. This was the two variations and the coda and dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy. And again, we've been listening to a recording by the Philadelphia Orchestra under Eugene Ormandy. We're going to listen to one last quick excerpt. But before we do that, we want to remind everybody about when and exactly where these performances of Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker are coming up this weekend.
So they are December 12th and 13th at the UW Parkside Main Stage Theater in the Rita Talon Pickett Center. And the performances are at 1:30 and 6 o'clock on Saturday and 1:30 on Sunday.
And one thing we're especially proud of is ticket prices are just $15 for adults and $8 for children. We try and keep it accessible for everyone that wants to come.
Very good. Great idea. And we're talking on Monday morning, of course, so I suspect you have what amount to dress rehearsals now for this, the next several days or nights, or both?
We do. We go into the theater with the kids on Thursday. We have our technical rehearsal on Thursday, a dress rehearsal on Friday, and performances on Saturday and Sunday.
Wow. And are the kids with you every single day?
Pretty much.
Yeah, most of them are, especially as they get a little bit older, get a little bit of some of the more advanced roles. They do take class every day.
Yeah, some of the more advanced students, with the exception of Thanksgiving Thursday and Friday, will have been with us every day for the last 5 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it shows in the excellence of the performance that we get to see on that stage. Mark Darling and Linda Bennett are the co-directors of the Studio of Classical Dance Arts. And before we let you go, what is the address of your website if people want to investigate more about what you do?
www.classicaldancearts.com.
And I know your studio is on Meacham Road, which is not, right?
Well, it's actually on Chicory Road.
Oh, Chicory Road. Okay.
2745 Chicory Road. We're right across from the Humane Society. Right. We have a little corner of, our space is not little, but it's a big industrial building, the former Amatech building, and we have about 11,000 square feet. It's just a magnificent studio. We feel very, very lucky to have the space.
That's not far from where I live, so one of these days I'll just pop in and visit and take a look. But in the meantime, I'm so glad you could come to the morning show today. This has been an absolute delight. Mark Darling, Linda Bennett, thank you so much, and best wishes with this weekend's performances of Nutcracker.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks for having us.
And we finish out with the wonderful Tripak, which is the Russian Cossack dance. Music from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker, played by the Philadelphia Orchestra under Eugene Ormandy. This is WGTD HD.